Well, Larry told him where to get off, hung up, called me. I called our publisher, asked him what was going on. He asked me where I was. I told him I was in the city. He asked me how fast I could get to their offices. I told him about half an hour and what was going on. He told me he would tell me when I got there. I did get there about 40 minutes later, and he said, listen, our phone has been ringing off the hook all morning. Apparently, the media has latched on to the idea that this brand new UFO book, which has the word gate in the title, and which a signed inscribed copy was found that had to have been signed just a few days before because of the timeline of when the book came out, was found in the home of this mass murder. And you are going to have to start taking these calls. And they set me up with a phone. And I sat by that phone for, I think, something over 3 hours and took calls from different media people and reporters all morning and into the afternoon, and did my best to convince them that there was no connection between this book, Left at East Gate, and the Heaven's Gate cult that had just killed itself. And at one point, some idiot said to me, well, you know, again, East Gate, Heaven's Gate, and I just screamed into the phone at that point. I had really had it. What about what?
I can't imagine that. Mr. Cool yelling into the phone.
You're a
very tolerant person. You've had enough, huh?
I've got a long fuse, yes. Most people that know me know it takes a lot to set me off, but I had had it. And it was once again somebody saying, you know, Heaven's Gate, East Gate, what's the connection? And I just screamed, did you ever hear of Watergate? And basically hung up on them. And that was our first blast of national publicity, which was the worst publicity that any new author could ever want for their book.
I started to say, not every new author can get their book on the CBS News, right away.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's it. And what set me off to begin with, which I write about in the opening and the closing of this column, as you know, Jerry, was the fact that an individual who channels had posted something on the internet that went viral and was all over Facebook as well, that the comet that we have just had pass that really didn't amount to that much, I forget what the designation for it was, but that it wasn't really a comet, that it was a mothership, and that it had a docking station inside the sun, and on and on and on about the Galactic Federation.
Yeah, I remember all of that.
Oh, my
God. All
of
those people talking about things like that.
Yeah.
Pretty far out stuff.
It is. And once again, if that's what this person, who I'm sure is a very nice person, wants to believe, that's fine. When you tell me that it's a fact, knowing that there are people who are so lost and so weak-minded that they are, you know, recruited into cults every day and, you know, allow other people to run their life and give them everything and become just a slave to somebody else's, you know, power trip, that is not okay with me. And it really did flash me back to this terrible episode in 1997, this mass murder of this cult, how Larry and I unfortunately got caught up in this story, how we met Marshall Applewhite, and, you know, just the devastating results, not just for these individuals, but of course, all their families. And yet, once again, here's somebody saying that the comet that has just passed or was passing Earth at the time wasn't really a comet, it was a spaceship. And I thought, Jesus Christ, what are you going to say? And I came down like 10 tons of bricks, and that column is, I think, two issues back in UFO Truth magazine.
Yeah, I would recommend people read that because I was aware of the column, and that's the reason I wanted to bring this up to you, Peter Robbins.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's an interesting story. Like you say, it might have been a little, I don't know, harrowing or something when you brought it up back in those days, but on hindsight, it's pretty interesting.
Oh, it absolutely is interesting.
And as far as you could tell, Applewhite seemed to have some sort of vibes that were evil.
You know, I don't even know if evil is the word. He had such a twisted, inaccurate, delusional reality that he lived in, he didn't skip out.
Yeah.
He took his own life too. He also, talk about, commitment to a crazy idea. Like a lot of these cult people, he felt that, you've got to, sexuality, you've got to leave it alone, you've got to be celibate. And he and one of his followers had themselves surgically castrated, which is pretty draconian. It's one
yes,
thing
it
to
is.
Say, yeah. So he was out of his mind. What happened, what he created, was evil incarnate, no question. But I guess philosophically speaking, was he evil? Certainly in a way. In another way, he was the most lost soul in the world, leading other lost souls, and he bought his own lies. He died as a result of his own delusions, just like those lost souls that he led into.
That's a good way to put it, Peter.
Yeah, terrible.
And interesting story. You had any other people showing up at a book signing that
everybody
are noteworthy?
Everybody
I'm going to have to stay in touch with you every time you do a book signing, find out if something unusual happened. By the way, when are you going to do another personal appearance?
Let's see. My next one. Let's see. I have a bunch of talks lined up for the second half of the year, conferences and the like. First half of the year is still pretty much dedicated to writing and working on a new book and a lot of correspondence. But next one.
Can you give me a hint about the new book?
Sure.
About the content?
It's going to be a book that pulls together a great deal of the research that I've done over the past 30 years and put it into a format where it's sort of unified and where readers who have some familiarity with my work or no familiarity will have a chance to have it, a great deal of it, all together under one cover, connected up by quite a number of interesting stories, accounts, a few of them quite funny, some of them very chilling, and try to give folks an idea of what it's like to do the kind of work that we do in this very misunderstood and very, very fascinating field.
And I will keep you posted. Yeah, you're going to have to keep them posted, is what I was getting ready to say. It already sounds like a great book, and I know it'll be a great interview once you're ready to start revealing some of this.
Oh, yes, I'm very excited about it. And since Left at East came out, people have asked me about how come you haven't written another book. I have to remind them that I've probably written several hundred conference papers, articles, columns, commentaries, editorials, position papers, obituaries. I've never stopped writing, but I've just stayed focused in another area of publishing and of writing. But it is overdue, and I'm hoping it will be out by the end of the year. And again, I will keep you updated on its progress. I will tell you that in the second half of this year, I'm hoping, fingers crossed, for the first time in 4 years to be back in a place that's very special to both of us, which is Roswell, New Mexico this summer, waiting for confirmation on that. I'm helping to organize 3 different conferences in New England coming up this autumn. All 3 of which I have worked on in the past. One is the Experiencers Speak Conference, the first weekend in September, in Portland, Oregon, which is very special. With the exception of myself and 2 or 3 other colleagues, all of the presenters are abductees and experiencers. Also, the New England UFO Conference, which kind of premiered last year, that will be in September or October in Leominster, Massachusetts. And we are hoping to get the Exeter, New Hampshire UFO Conference up and running again also in September. of this coming year. I will be back in England in late August, speaking at a conference in Yorkshire, England, that, again, Gary Haseltine is sponsoring with UFO Truth magazine. Very much looking forward to returning there, even though I was just there a few weeks ago. And a few other ones that I don't have confirmed, so I'm going to have to keep to myself for the moment, but that I'm very excited about. One that
You're going to have to keep me informed about Roswell.
I will. And here's one other one that I know I can talk about, which is that right now we are working in pre-production and the planning stages of a new and what I think will be a very important annual conference called the Fire in the Sky Conference. It is organized around the experience of somebody that many of us hold in very high regard, Travis Walton. And it will be in Arizona and on as close as possible to the actual anniversary of his famous 1975 abduction. Working closely with Travis on organizing that and very excited to be part of that one as well.
Do you know where exactly it'll be held in Arizona?
I'm not sure whether it will be in Snowflake, where Travis lived at the time, or one of the other surrounding communities. But yeah, as we get the details, I will forward them on to you so that you can inform your listeners. And, you know, as we get closer to any of these conferences, I would like to get
you back on and probably need to get Travis on again.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. You bet.
So, in other words, after all these years, and how many years have you been at the UFO business?
Well, I became involved very suddenly in the mid-70s after having a memory of my childhood UFO sighting that I had with my late sister Helen come back at me like a hurricane. And my life has really never been the same since that day. Some years after that, I did begin to write professionally and speak, and I will always be extremely proud of the fact that the year after that, in 1976, I met another New York artist who I shared a profound interest with in the subject of UFOs. And 5 years after that, he published his first book, a very important book called Missing Time. And for many of the years afterwards, I worked as my friend Bud Hopkins' assistant and confidant and close colleague. And we remained friends for 35 years up until August of 2011, when Bud was taken from us at the age of 80.
He certainly got around for somebody 80 years old.
Yes, bless his heart.
I can say that because I'm approaching that myself. I'm 74.
Yeah.
So you're a youngster compared to us.
Yeah. Bud remains a great inspiration to me. I miss him every day, but like anybody that, you know, you've been close to or love in your life, you deal with the pain and you just feel very lucky that you have all the good memories that you have and that you had a chance to have that person in your life.
You know, quite a few UFO researchers have passed on in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
And it I guess it's just the nature of the business, and we're all getting older.
That's
the only
thing I
can figure.
Yes, where are the aliens when you need them?
And I've been battling my problems, my demons, for a couple of years, but...
Yeah. That's right.
It looks like I'm going to be back to normal by about April 15th or so. I was talking to my surgeon the other day, and he thinks he can back out this cancer operation that he did to restore me to normal by now.
I can't tell you how. Sorry.
No, I'm just saying that it's going to be... a good year for me, and it sounds like it's going to be a great year for you.
I think so, and I can't tell you how happy I am that you are coming back to good health again, Jerry, and how excited so many of my friends were when they learned that I was going to be back on the show, and how many people out there love you, admire you, and, you know, really respect all of the good work you have done to bring this very misunderstood subject to the attention of more and more people with your terrific show.
Thank you very much. We, you know, I've never thought about retiring, and as long as I can function, a lot of people wondered why I continued to do this during my critical medical crisis here and there.
Yep.
But it's something that's twofold. First of all, it's been my life for a long time.
Yeah.
And secondly, it's quite refreshing to stay busy. I notice a lot of people that come down with things like I did, with cancer and a few other things, they get preoccupied with that.
Yep.
And forget about living. And so
That's correct.
I'm quite dedicated to the shows, as you know.
Yes.
And that there's a fine line between two things that I like to do. One thing is I like to present all ideas.
Yeah.
And the other thing is I don't necessarily endorse some of these ideas.
Correct.
And so, you know, you walk a little strange line there. But I think that's a whole lot like what you do. You manage to keep your independence and at the same time an open mind, but actually
yes.
discover some very interesting facts.
Well, for me, I go into every investigation without any agenda. That's a secret weapon for me. I just follow it where it goes, and I get the results that I get. I don't have some, you know, pet theory that I want to prove, or I don't want to, you know, I'm not looking to make other people wrong. I'm proud of the work that I do, and like you, I can't imagine ever retiring. I don't think I'll ever be in a financial position to retire, but even if I was, this is exciting and important work. And if I wasn't doing this, I'd probably go back to full-time work in the arts or as a photographer. I love to travel. The people that have come into my life because of this work and where it's taken me, which is all over the world, have made me feel like I'm one of the luckiest people ever, and I hope nothing ever changes that.
Our time's almost up, Peter. You got something you'd like to bring up that we haven't talked about?
Well, I will tell you that quietly for the past few years, and now not so quietly, I'm associate producer of an independent film, which I hope will be out next year, called Apollo Minus Project. And your listeners can Google it. And I think it's an important film about the UFO cover-up from an angle that really has not been explored. And I am optimistic that this film will be an important one. And I just wanted to say that before I go off the air.
Yeah, now the film itself, is it already ready to view in its entirety, or are you going to distribute it?
Nope. Still in development, no question about that. And with any luck at all, it will be in theaters next year or on television, one or the other. Other than that,
fantastic.
It's been a pleasure as always, Jerry, and I'll look forward to returning the show whenever you invite me back.
Thank you very much, Peter, for a great show as usual. And I'm glad to hear you may go back to Roswell. I mean, you know, there for a little while, Roswell wasn't Roswell without you making an appearance.
Thank you. Well, I hope that will be the case again.
Okay. Thanks very much, Peter Robbins. And we look forward to the book when it comes out. What do you think that will be?
I'm hoping by the end of the year, and we'll certainly let you know, Jerry.
Okay. Thank you very much. We're going to play good night. We're going to go ahead and close the show out here with Lieutenant Charles. He was commander of the base. He's actually the assistant commander, I guess. He's the
Deputy
lieutenant
base
colonel.
Commander. deputy base commander at the time, a lieutenant colonel, you bet.
And so we're going to listen to what he has to say here. And this is just part of a recording, and Peter tells me there's actually hours of this that he's made.
More than an hour, certainly, is what he told Larry and I, and I hope someday he releases that material so we can hear it.
Okay, then we'll close out with that. Thanks very much, Peter, for being on. And folks, listen to this very clearly. I think Peter's correct. It's the same opinion I got. This is the real deal.
Strobe-like flashes to the rather sporadic, but there's definitely something, some kind of phenomenon. 3:05, at about 10 degrees horizon directly north, we've got two strange objects, half-moon shape, dancing about with colored lights on them, but guess to be about 5 to 10 miles out, maybe less. The half-moons are now turning into full circles. I know there was an eclipse or something there for a minute or two. 3:15, now we've got an object about 10 degrees directly south, 10 degrees off the horizon. And the ones in the north are moving, one's moving away from us.
Moving out fast.
This one on the right heading away, too.
Yeah, we're both heading north. Okay, here he comes from the south. He's coming toward us now. Now we're observing what appears to be a beam coming down to the ground. This is unreal. 3:30, there's either 3:30, and the objects are still in the sky, although the one to the south looks like it's losing a little bit of altitude. We're turning around and heading back toward the base. The object to the south is still beaming down lights to the ground. 400 hours, one object still hovering over Woodbridge Base at about 5 to 10 degrees off the horizon, still moving erratic and similar lights and beaming down as earlier.
A recording of the actual investigation going on of Colonel Charles Halt, as his mission was to go out and find out what the lights were. As you heard, he saw some strange objects and lights scanning the forest near the nuclear dump and the nuclear supply area that was the reason the Air Force Base was there. This was in 1980. And we still don't know all the details. I'm Jerry Pippin.